Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, September 16. Hello again, Orion Samuelson, along with Max Armstrong, joining you for our weekly get-together to look at the markets from Wall Street to the Board of Trade to the Mercantile Exchange and beyond. On Wall Street, a volatile week with an up and down market movement just about every day, but a narrow trading range. But let's look at where we end the week on this Friday. The stock market traded lower today. And one of the reasons, the possibility of a $14 billion fine against Deutsche Bank. Weighed on big banks and investors wrestled with a lingering uncertainty about when the Federal Reserve will hike interest rates. The settlement proposal made during negotiations between our Department of Justice and Deutsche Bank over claims that the German bank missold mortgage-backed securities came in a lot larger than most people expected. And Deutsche Bank's U.S. listed shares down 9.33% today. The S&P 500 Financial Index dropped nearly 1%, dragging down the benchmark index the most. Now, traders have all but ruled out the possibility of the Federal Reserve raising interest rates at its meeting that starts next Tuesday. There are still doubts and questions about when the Fed may finally pull the trigger. And will that hurt market sentiment? One trader said it's the uncertainty of next week, the complacency of investors trying to reevaluate their portfolios as we do prepare for an interest rate. Today, helping limit losses, Intel's 3% gain to a 15-year high after the chipmaker raised its third quarter revenue forecast. So for the week, the Dow edged up just 0.2%. The S&P gained 0.5%, but the NASDAQ jumped 2.33%. Apple's decline today ended a three-day winning streak after their introduction of the new iPhone, and Oracle's 4.75% drop following a weak quarterly profit also impacted the markets today. And then there's the oil story. Crude oil prices fell 2% today. Multi-week lows as swelling exports from Iran reinforced fears of a global glut, and gasoline rallied on refinery and pipeline outages. We'll talk about that just a little. Well, let's talk about it right now because sticker shock is definitely hitting motorists in different parts of the country because a key U.S. gasoline pipeline was shut down this week. The company, Colonial Pipeline Company, hopes to have the lineup by Thursday after delays to repair a leak boosted fuel prices. Analysts, however, expect some motorists to feel the sticker shock far longer. Colonial, which is the largest U.S. refined products pipeline system, last Friday shut its main gasoline and distillate lines that run from the Gulf Coast refining hub to the East Coast after the leak was discovered in Shelby County, Alabama. So gasoline futures have soared 9% in the past week, mainly on the closure. Prices at the pump in certain areas started to spike today because of the ongoing partial shutdown of the vital artery that flows 1.2 million barrels per day of gasoline and other products. The company has restarted operations at some parts of its gasoline pipeline at reduced rates, also pumping fuel on its distillate line, which has been completely restarted. So now let's take a look at what's ahead next week. And we know what the number one headline is for next week, don't we? Everybody. Federal Open Market Committee begins a two-day meeting on interest rate policy next Tuesday with a news conference by Chair Janet Yellen due on Wednesday. The Federal Reserve is set for a lively debate and could give a clear signal of an interest rate increase to come, even if it follows market expectations for a pause this month. Economists polled by Reuters are increasingly expecting an interest rate increase this year, but only in December. Other activities in the coming week, we'll get more on the health of the U.S. housing market. It apparently continues to grow, but the pace is very uneven. Commerce Department data on Tuesday expected to show that housing starts fell to a 1,190,000 unit annualized rate in August, and that would be down from the number in July. Building permits are forecast to go up 1.17 million unit rate last month from a 1.14 million unit pace in July. Then we get a report during the week from the National Association of Realtors. That'll come out Thursday. Expected to show that existing home sales rose to a 5.45 million unit rate in August. That would be up from the 5.39 million unit pace in July. Other things being watched besides the Fed and the housing industry, Mylan Chief Executive Heather Bresch will appear at a congressional hearing on Wednesday over price increases for its EpiPen emergency allergy treatment. The company has been widely criticized, including criticism from Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton for sharply raising the price of EpiPens, which are carried by people with life-threatening allergies. Also next week, Adobe Systems releases its third quarter results on Tuesday. The software maker's transition to a subscription model has paid off with a significant rise in customers over the last few quarters. However, investors will still keep a close eye on the company's forecast to gauge demand for its cloud-based software packages. And then a stock that is watched with a great deal of interest coming into the holiday season, package delivery company FedEx, will post its first quarter results on Tuesday. On Wednesday, General Mills likely to report slower sales growth in the first quarter, hurt by weak demand for breakfast foods and yogurt, its two biggest businesses. The Senate Banking Committee will get together on Tuesday to question Wells Fargo Chair and CEO John Stumpf over an investigation related to sales practices that led the bank to agree to a $190 million settlement with regulators. Back to the housing industry. Lehner Corporation expected to report strong third quarter revenue on Tuesday, helped by higher home sales and prices. Rising employment, low mortgage rates continue to fuel demand for housing, and investors would be looking for comments on order trends, financial forecast, and an update on its Houston market, where it has seen weak demand due to falling oil prices. So a relatively busy week, but everything will be on side stage compared to the meeting getting underway on Tuesday, concluding on Wednesday by the Open Market Committee of the Federal Reserve. As we look at some of the other headlines this week, Apple, of course, introduced its new iPhone product. And Apple, after a couple of days, said the initial quantities of iPhone 7 Plus were sold out. Boeing Company came up with an interesting take on airplane demand in China. According to Boeing, Chinese airlines are likely to purchase planes worth over $1 trillion over 20 years as they expand fleets to cater to robust growth in domestic and overseas tourism as they take a more bullish forecast of the Chinese aviation demand. And saying China as a market continued to exceed expectations, Boeing estimated 6,810 aircraft purchases in the period up to 2035. That's up 7.5% from its previous prediction of demand in China. McDonald's, meanwhile, is wanting to get out of some of the Asian stores that it has. Fast food giant McDonald's has received final bids from at least three groups for its China and Hong Kong outlets. And the situation comes, of course, after food scares in Asia, not only impacting McDonald's, but several other food firms, and that took its toll on sales for fast food outlets and franchises in China. The median U.S. household income rose last year, its first significant annual increase since 2007. And it helped push down the number of people living in poverty to 53.1 million. That, according to data released last Tuesday. About 29 million people did not have health insurance in 2015. That is down from the 33 million in the previous year. And median income rose 5.2% to $56,500 from $53,700 in 2014. That's in large part due to the increase in employment. Well, we're going to talk the commodity world, and that's been a fascinating one this year as well. Max Armstrong will sit down with our good friend, Mr. Georgie, president of Allendale in McHenry, Illinois, and Max and Paul will talk about what's happening as we move into harvest time when we continue on the market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
At our studio this weekend, Paul Georgie, Allendale Incorporated, with the harvest underway. Well, some places, they're waiting to roll into the field. Paul, what are you hearing? Some of these anecdotal reports that are coming in, both from big yield territory and areas where we know the yields aren't so good. I was in western Tennessee this week. I guess that's why I'm asking. Highly variable there. Nowhere near the kind of yields they've had the past couple of years, but they tend to be the exception, I suppose, this year.
Well, I think that certain areas have got problems, and we're starting to hear more of it. Other areas are doing very, very well. I would say southern part of the Midwest, southern part of the Corn Belt, where the heavy rains just kept coming all summer long, they got a beautiful-looking crop out there. But when the harvest actually takes place, we're finding a lot of problems, a lot of diseases. One of my customers said he's never seen it so bad, and he thinks there's every disease in his field that he can think of. So that we're hearing in Indiana, southern Illinois. And then when you get to Iowa, western Illinois, and out in Nebraska, yields are coming in very, very good. Missouri yields are coming in good because they got it planted early. They did get rain, and now they're getting it harvested at a good time. So we're hearing 240, 265 bushel acre yields in Iowa that normally have an APH of like 225. But the thing that I am concerned about, and don't know if what's factual or not, these crops look so good. Now, yields are coming in less than what producers thought in the southern Midwest. Is that off of what they thought was going to be here or actually off of their APH? I haven't got verification on that.
There was a lot of talk, of course, in the month of August about what the heat was doing to trim back the corn yields. And then if we looked at the September crop report from USDA, the conclusion was, well, it might have done something, but it didn't appear to do much, at least according to the USDA crop report. Are we still thinking, are there a lot of folks still of the belief, especially some of those crop scouts who were out in the fields, that is yet to show up in diminished corn yields?
Well, I think, first of all, the September crop report, you look at that, and the USDA had the crop conditions report on a weekly basis that was well above average, well above and record conditions on a weekly basis. So that was very difficult for them to lower the September yield. This October report, we're actually going to get actual harvested yields. I think we're going to see some lower yields as we go along. But I think a fact that we have to realize is that we're going to see some total production that could even be a record production and probably more than 15 billion when it's all said and done, simply because we got more acres that are going to produce good yields. Nebraska is an example of that. Nebraska producers are harvesting silage. He thinks his yield is down a little bit, but he's going to have a lot more corn because the ends of the fields, the corners that are dry land that didn't get irrigated, they're going to produce just as much as the irrigated. So, and we also got acreage adjustments coming up in October that could and probably will show more corn acres and more soybean acres. So the crop could get bigger, not necessarily by yield in the corn.
You mentioned the weekly crop bulletins and the way that that corn crop stayed so good all through the growing season. This week we started to see a little bit of a diminishing in that rating, did we not, in terms of the corn condition rating?
Well, we've seen a slight reduction in it, but we're at a time period where we should see that. The crop doesn't look as good. It's drying up. It's maturing. So we should see a quicker decline, actually, than we have seen. So that's going to be, you know, the crop conditions report is really a beauty contest. And, you know, the harvest is going to tell us what's really out there.
In terms of how we get rid of this crop, the demand, there's nothing new there, is there? I mean, we're still looking at a pretty tough scenario in terms of moving these large supplies.
Well, demand is a big issue, and we've got a whole marketing year to work through that. I think the first thing the farmer's going to have to deal with is finding storage for this crop. And then if we have disease issues, we could have quality issues that are going to be a problem, a headache for the farmer. Can this crop be stored as long as a farmer would like to keep it? So those are some questions that will have to be answered down the road. But demand is a real struggle right now. We've got a tremendous supply of food around the world, like wheat, soybeans, corn in other countries. And just today or this week, we've got the Black Sea wheat, $7 a ton cheaper than U.S. corn. So it makes it very difficult to continue to have demand. We're going to be watching the value of the U.S. dollar compared to currencies in other countries, because that makes a big difference for the buyer when he comes in and has to buy U.S. Corn, even though it's cheap and the dollar is strong. He still doesn't get as much product.
When you're talking about that wheat out of the Black Sea region, you're talking about it being so cheap that it could be substituted as a feed ingredient for the corn that might ordinarily be in that feed?
Absolutely. The wheat has got a higher protein than corn, so it's going to take away from corn usage and meal usage in livestock rations. And if you're a world buyer, I can buy wheat, get some protein, get the some energy with it, not have to buy corn. So if you're comparing the two, the wheat would be the better buy.
What are you telling your grower customers about the basis and watching this cash market situation? And I guess I ask you that in light of what you were talking about earlier with some of these quality problems, could they get bad enough that it might affect the basis in some areas, that there might need to be corn brought in, that farmers really watching the basis closely might be able to respond to that quickly and take advantage of a price bump locally?
Well, I think that's going to have to be watched very closely. The poor quality grain usually is not bullish on a historical basis, and that means it has to be moved. So when you are forced to move grain, you lose the upper hand in marketing. So that could continue to press prices as we go through harvest here. There won't be any need to blend anything. So the elevators will look for this disease issues, and if it's aflatoxin or whatever it might be, that'll be watched very closely, and they'll probably provide some discounts for that. Basis is also going to be a problem. We've got some customers up in Minnesota. They want to deliver old crop corn to their elevator, and the elevator says, "I can't take it. I can't take it because it's full of other farmers' corn that they've got stored at the elevator." So if you're not and haven't been thinking about marketing your grain and what you're going to do with it at harvest time, that is something you need to do. If you have to, you might be better off selling it than storing it outside and just market it, use futures or options to re-own.
Thanks for being with us, Paul. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Paul Giorgi, Allendale Incorporated.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
As we move into harvest time, Max and I do have the opportunity to travel around the heart of the corn soybean belt. This week, I traveled to Davenport, Iowa, to speak at a Farm Bureau banquet and did see at least one corn combine in the cornfield that was rolling along. But Max, I know you have been traveling around the country as well.
We've talked with quite a few growers this week who are ready for harvest, and some who've already been in the fields. And we've also visited with folks in the farm equipment business and with grain elevator operators. Hey, those folks at the grain elevators are looking at the daunting challenge ahead of them to handle crops that are this big this year. I was on the program a couple of nights ago at the little town of Gifford, Illinois. The Gifford State Bank held its annual meeting there. They invited myself and agriculture meteorologist Greg Solier, and I moderated the program that included Amy Sage from the Andersons, the big elevator near Champaign, and Roger Miller with Premier Cooperative. They have, we were right across the street from one of their elevators there at Gifford. And these folks are looking at what's coming at them. Now, let there be no mistake about it. They make money at these elevators from the volume of handling big crops. It's a far, far better scenario than some have endured when their growers have had very little crop to market. Now, that said, there are many questions about how the truckloads of corn and soybeans will be handled and where the grain will be stored and how it will be moved. On that program for the Gifford State Bank, I was told that the availability of rail cars should be good. They've been assured that they ought to be able to move that grain out without any problem. The elevator representatives that were with me told me that their bins are empty. They're awaiting all of the grain that will come their way. Just what happens with harvest time weather, of course, will be a major consideration. You know, last year there was almost a month of rain-free harvest weather in that area around Champaign, Illinois. The elevators struggled to keep up with the growers during that rapid harvest. Now, on the other hand, if rains do come frequently, as some of the forecasters, such as our friend agriculture meteorologist Greg Solier, have been saying, there could be delays that would give elevators the opportunity to keep up, but that continued moisture could exacerbate the problems they've already seen with grain quality. Some parts of western and southern Illinois, as we heard this week, have already been described as trouble spots for grain quality, where the disease problems are going to erode the already insufficient price for the crop, because growers will be taking a dock at the elevator. On the other hand, we heard something interesting this week from Bryce Knorr with Farm Futures as he talked about storage of the crop.
Even though storage is going to be tight, most farmers are going to have space available for their crops. The key is not to just put that grain in the bin and plan on sitting on it until spring or summer. Take a look at your bottom line. You may be surprised if you've done some hedging during the summer on the rally. You may have a profitable price locked in because your cost of production is going to be lower due to good yields. So first and foremost, before you decide on your marketing strategy, figure out what your profit objective is, and you may come pretty close to a profit already.
Bryce Knorr with Farm Futures, and of course, as we saw earlier this summer, Orion, in that June rally, that surprising rally that took place, pricing opportunities can come when you least expect it, and growers need to be mindful of that as they get tied up in the harvest, and they're all busy here to be watching for any kind of an opportunity that could come along where they can perhaps find a way to break even on these large crops.
Yes, indeed, Max. It is a large crop because that September crop report last Monday said for the first time in history we'll produce over 15 billion bushels of corn and we'll produce more than 4 billion bushels of soybeans. And Monsanto in the news this week two different ways. First of all, the deal that was accepted, Bayer buying Monsanto, value $67 billion cash, which is the largest cash happening in history of merger activity, according to the records that we took a look at. So that is complete. We don't know yet what it will mean, but we do know that there will be a lot of jurisdictional activity to overlook that agreement and contract. 30 different jurisdictions in several different countries will have to approve. And of course, here, the Justice Department will take a close, hard look at this agribusiness. As a matter of fact, Chuck Grassley, the senator from Iowa, is going to be meeting with farmers in the next several days to really hear what they think about these agribusiness mergers. But then late in the week, this news from Monsanto, the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, today said its current position on glyphosate, that's the key ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup herbicide, is that the chemical is not likely carcinogenic to humans. And of course, that charge has been floating around the world for several years now. But the EPA's proposed position on the controversial chemical, outlined in a 227-page paper it published on the regulations.gov website, which the EPA manages. After reviewing the available data, the paper states, and I quote, "The strongest support is for not likely to be carcinogenic to humans at doses relevant to human health risk assessment." The paper was among 86 documents which included dozens of research studies about glyphosate. All the material is to be reviewed next month by an advisory group of scientists known as the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act Scientific Advisory Panel. And try to say that after you've had a glass of wine and see how far you get. But two big news announcements coming from the folks at Monsanto, or I should say involving the folks at Monsanto. So where will we start the trading on Monday? Well, we ended today with a green screen at the Board of Trade grain market and at the Mercantile Exchange livestock market. All of the contracts ending higher. Let's look at grain first of all. December wheat ended at $4.75 a bushel. That's a gain of 4 cents. December corn will start Monday at $3.37, a gain of 6.25. The November soybean contract will start the week at $9.66 after gaining 15.75 cents a bushel today. Livestock trade. The October lean hog contract will start trading Monday at $55.47 a hundredweight after gaining just 27 cents today. The October live cattle contract will start the week at $107.87 after gaining 85 cents today. And September feeder cattle will start the week at $135.50 after gaining $1.27 a hundredweight in today's trade. So that's where we'll start a busy week. And they're saying the corn bean market moved higher because too much rain in the forecast. Well, thank you for joining us. Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson here on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.